Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Oh, goodness. Always something. I guess today is going to be the day I spend with Hillary Clinton because and not just because of the pushback. Generally, I'm not too concerned about pushback. I wouldn't do what I do every day if I was, but I get it. I hear the criticism and I'm willing to accept that. If I claim independent status, which I do, then I appear at times to be one-sided in my criticisms. Well, you know, it's kind of like there's news dominating right now with Trump and Hillary Camp is, well, let's put it, has been quiet. Until yesterday, we got the news of some of the WikiLeaks email content. Want to get into that because there seems to be some degree of anti-Catholic sentiment coming from the Clinton camp. We'll look at that. We'll look at that a little more closely and see exactly what it is. But I also want to reiterate my position when it comes to why I will not and cannot vote for Hillary Clinton. We'll get into all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in just a moment.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We are back. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you, Leo Brown. Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. 15 minutes every afternoon. I guess we got some information coming out of this WikiLeak situation that some of the emails apparently, and I'm not sure, I don't know that we know at this point, are they the deleted batch? Is it something else? We've seen these things happening, and now it kind of looks like there could have been some anti-Catholic sentiment coming from the Clinton camp, for whatever it's worth, if this will change any sort of position there. But it appears to be this particular individual, Haplin is his name, who is working for with Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign advisor. Is that right? Am I getting this position right? Nonetheless, it was a Podesta email coming from Haplin, where Haplin seems to be critical of the Wall Street Journal CEO and Fox News CEO in at least the what he saw as a way of playing their Catholic faith to essentially a conservative tone. And he says, essentially, this is a bastardization of the faith. And what are they thinking? They're going to go and use these Thomistic arguments and talk about subsidiarity, and no one will know what they're talking about anyway. So kind of some harsh criticism there. But interestingly, I think you've kind of heard me echo some of this stuff when we're at a point of putting our politics above our faith and simply kind of using our faith as a bit of a guise, a ruse, who knows, right? And yeah, I would certainly not sit in judgment of anyone who claims to be a faithful Catholic. We have many different shapes and sizes, and that's okay. But at the same time, we have to realize that there is there's undoubtedly an authentic expression of the faith and an unauthentic expression of the faith. And I think that those of us who strive to be in this authentic expression, I've said this many, many times, you know, the guy on the unicycle, it looks easy, but man, it takes a lot of focus and a lot of attention and a lot of balance just to get there. It gets easier, undoubtedly, it gets easier, but to get there, to build yourself to that point of having that kind of attention to the balance, it's tough, very tough. And really, my goodness, that's what I want us to understand more than anything, especially in this election cycle. Let's really, really understand what our faith is about. And I keep hearing the, you know, Trump is the choice because never Hillary. And look, I get the never Hillary, but probably not for the reasons why you. And I've even asked this on Facebook, please articulate for me exactly what you don't like about this woman. And give me facts, not just something like, she creeps me out, or, you know what, I've never really liked her. No, what is it? Because I've bullet pointed what I have a concern with. She's promised to continue funding Planned Parenthood at their profitable measure. They don't need subsidies, but they get them. And that's the most ridiculous thing ever. When a company profits year after year at the same level of the subsidy from the government, that seems really wrong. You don't need to subsidize that. Isn't there a place that that money could be better used than subsidizing an abortion giant? Come on, let's look at that. So she's vowed to continue and pledge that support to Planned Parenthood. She has also vowed to repeal the Hyde Amendment. The Hyde Amendment is there to prevent taxpayer funding of abortions outside of the U.S., which there would be plenty of opportunity to fund abortions in other countries with taxpayer money. And Clinton has undoubtedly definitively said that once she's president, that will be gone. That restriction will be lifted. And then, of course, there's the partial birth abortion, late-term abortions that Hillary Clinton has supported, because she's essentially said that she does not believe in any restrictions on abortion. And she wants an unfettered opportunity for women to approach this opportunity. So there are my reasons. Has nothing to do with Benghazi. Has nothing to do with emails. I'm going to trust the process that both of these went through. You've heard me say I don't know about Comey and his odd, I think at best, opinion of this that we heard him articulate after clearing Clinton. But Benghazi's been investigated. The email has been investigated. And right now, Hillary is clean of that. Now, Trump has said she would be in jail under his presidency, which is a very interesting dictatorial sort of threat. But let's stick to the issues. Those are non-issues. At this point, they're non-issues. You could say, well, but no. Stick to the issues. What is it? Do you believe like I do? Then great. Then believe like that. But don't just take a talking point memo. Not that there are any talking point memos out there. But don't just take a talking point memo and say, well, this is why I believe what I believe. Because it might be propagandized, right? No one is out there with a totally unbiased view of politics. I'm sorry. You're not. Mine is biased. Mine is biased toward my Catholic faith. And you hear me say that all the time, and I stand on that. So that's what you're going to get. It's going to be an authentic expression of that, and not everybody's going to like it, because there are those who want to put their politics first. I don't do that. My politics are a far second. Now, I'm politically aware, and I want to be engaged and be a part of a solution and not a problem. But at the same time, I allow my faith to dictate every decision I make politically. If only we were to do this more and at least explore issues from that perspective, I think we would see a lot of interesting things. So back to Clinton. I've expressed why I can't support her, and then I have also asked, from just a strictly humanistic standpoint, if you're a secular humanist, great, we're going to meet. I'm going to meet you as a religious humanist, you're going to meet me as a secular humanist, and we're going to look at the human issue. We're going to look at the human condition, and we're going to look at this and ask ourselves, how do we improve? How do we improve the human condition? Well, first off, I think we have to recognize humans, because we know until the civil rights movement of the mid-20th century, we had an issue with certain humans being non-humans, or subhuman, or partially human. We know that. Fortunately, we've gotten beyond that. It wasn't too far in our past, so we know that some of those things are still, unfortunately, very fresh. But now I think we're on the verge of a second human rights movement. We see what Black Lives Matters is doing, and we, as pro-lifers, this is our biggest opportunity. Now, I know it looks like it's politically charged, and liberal-leaning and pro-life and liberal just don't go together. But I'm asking us to step outside of our comfort zones, and I'm asking us to look at a different way of approaching an issue and to say, you know what, let's build alliances here. Let's realize we've got two massive civil rights opportunities in front of us. Let's come together on that. If you want to be a secular humanist, great. If you want to be a religious humanist, great. If you want to be a Black Lives Matter supporter, great. You want to be a pro-life leader, great. Let's pull all of that together. Let's pool our resources and let's say, how do we do this better? How do we move the needle in ways we've never done before? Culturally, socially. You know, one of the criticisms I saw, I mentioned this on Facebook, and one friend said, oh, well, Black Lives, because they talk about this community support, and apparently they say, you know, they want to envision or rearrange or whatever they say, the establishment of the family, in order to have this community support mechanism, which you got to realize the communities they're talking about. We need support. My goodness, we need support. You know, I'm in my neighborhood. We watch each other's kids all the time. Just last night, my neighbor's like, hey, Leo, I got to run, do this. Can she hang out here with your kids? Absolutely. Yes. We're a community. We do that. We help each other. We take care of each other. Why would we condemn that attitude? Why would we point fingers and say, oh, see, yeah, I knew they were up to something? No. My goodness. Let's look at their cause. Let's join hands. Let's begin to explore opportunities that say, you know what, we might be able to move this thing on down the road if we actually got together on some issues and decided now to look at this from a completely different perspective than we've ever imagined. Throw politics the heck out the window, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican, who cares? Let's look at the human person. Where's the dignity? How do we uphold that? How do we elevate that? How do we get momentum behind that? Those are the kind of questions that we have to ask. More to come. I'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, back after this.
Enjoy listening to the Leo Brown Almost Hour, consider becoming a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Happy to be with you. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith. That's 8 minutes every afternoon. Lots of Facebook activity, as always. It's where the conversations continue after the show. Only here for an hour, a little less than an hour, almost hour, 50 minutes every afternoon. But the fun just keeps on keeping on over on Facebook. So if you want to join in the conversation there, by all means, please do. I ask you to be substantive, if I could say the word. I ask you to bring substance to the equation. Inanity, I am no fan of. And for the record, if I say something of that nature, it's not insulting, or at least it shouldn't be. It's simply saying, this is inane. It means there is nothing here. Don't bring this to the table with nothing. Give me something we can chew on, we can talk about, we can discuss, and I will do that with you, promise you. And I will certainly try to be fair. I will challenge, I will push, I will encourage you to dig deeper. I will ask you to think differently. I promise you that. Sometimes I ask people to think differently who I agree with, simply because I want them to look at things a little more deeply. Because, see, I think this is the problem. I think this is where we are. We're in such a polarized world, so politically siloed, that we don't see out of those silos. The walls are so high, we're completely, and we're in a comfort zone. We're in a very, even if that comfort zone is a comfort zone that has a common enemy, right? We're all in this together against those guys. I think we got to stop thinking that way. And even if I challenge a particular group, it's not because I'm against them. It's because I'm simply saying, look at this. Look at this. Look at this. See this differently. Which is why I spent time talking about the pro-life movement and Black Lives Matter, which seems never the twain shall meet, because pro-lifers have co-opted the Black Lives Movement slogan with this All Life Matters garbage, and it's insensitive, it's tone deaf, it's wrong. I was down in Atlanta last week, had some really, really great sessions with individuals talking about this kind of stuff. One gentleman, black hip-hop artist named Propaganda, of all things, of all names, right, compares the Black Lives Movement to the Boston Tea Party. And I know that there are those who disagree with that. You're welcome to disagree, but I think if you see the dynamics of what was happening, and I've even had it said, well, that was us, Americans, protesting the taxes that England was levying. Yes, it was taxation without representation. But the key is without representation, right? That's the problem. That's the problem. Without representation. Taxation, if we felt represented, if we felt a part of something, if we felt that we were included, well, the Tea Party never would have happened. So it wasn't taxes were high. It was that no representation was there in Parliament. We felt we're way over here. We, when I say this, early underpinnings of our country, the founding colonists thought we're not being represented. And this is unfair. They're taxing us. They're taking our money. They're taking our currency. But we're not getting anything out of it. The injustice of no representation is what led to the revolution. Injustice. It wasn't just taxes. So, nor was it, and please don't fool yourself, nor was it religious liberty. That wasn't in this equation. If you look at the underpinnings of the American Revolution, it did boil down to one major issue: no representation. So it really opened my eyes to hear this presentation and this analogy of the Boston Tea Party, which was looting, rioting, and destruction of property that sparked a revolution. So when people don't feel like they're being heard, when they don't feel like they're getting represented, they are going to react, and it may look like a Ferguson or a Baltimore or many of the other recent events in this movement, which, again, Black Lives Matter, I promise you, they do not advocate for rioting. They don't. They're an activist group. They advocate for changing of systems, yes, but it's not to be done in this fashion. However, and I'm not condoning anything of this nature, I'm simply saying, look at our underpinnings. Look at what we have done. Look at where we have come from as a country. Look at why we established ourselves in the fashion that we did. It was a violent revolution. It wasn't some sort of, let's sit down to the table, all agree on something, shake hands, get up and go. It didn't happen that way. So when we see violence from individuals who do not feel represented, we can't simply say they need to calm it down. Because then you have Colin Kaepernick, who has calmed it down. He's just sitting down, choosing not to stand for the national anthem, kneeling, which is a pretty interesting sign of respect anyway. Right? This is what everybody loved about Tim Tebow. He's kneeling. So, my goodness, some can't win. But what I'm saying is, look at this opportunity, pro-lifers. Look at this opportunity. What if we said, we're going to take the energy that we have and the enthusiasm we have for protecting the unborn, and we are going to help you with your cause, Black Lives Matter. We're going to help you. Because in many cases, pro-lifers have a network of support. They have a network of finances. They have donors. They have people who will bring their cause to the forefront. They have lobbyists. They have a lot of things that could be of benefit to a group that is emerging and trying to get their voices heard. And isn't that what we always say? We want to give voice to the voiceless. So why don't we see that the pro-life movement is much larger than the unborn? It's not negating the unborn. There's a primacy. We talk about that all the time. There is a primacy. This has to happen first. Yes. Without life exiting the womb intact, you got nothing. Absolutely. But it doesn't end there. So how about instead of just the anti-abortion, but not really pro-life, which here in the Lexington Diocese, our Bishop John Stowe had a lot to say about this exact issue recently. So instead of just doing that, why don't we look at connecting some networks together and go, wow, you know what? We're stronger together. This may not look from the outset as being the same, but let's really get down to core issues, and we are the same. Let's really get down to the human rights issue that this is. Both of these issues, see them as human rights, and see that now we can join together with a common goal of saying all lives do matter. But we're going to see that some lives, like the unborn, some lives, like blacks, matter in a different way. But instead of simply co-opting or sloganizing or stealing something and or belittling or diminishing, we're going to say, you know what? No, we are going to come together on this. We're going to come together. We're going to actually reach across this chasm. And we're going to be able to stand together with real momentum. Tell me that would not be earth-shattering, because now you know what the March for Life becomes? Right? Instead of the 500,000 who are there, we bring 5 million. And it can't be ignored. The voices cannot be ignored. And what are we doing? We're standing together for human dignity and saying, this is what we want to see moving forward. We want to see a difference for our children and for our grandchildren. We want to see something totally, totally different. It sounds crazy. It sounds like, Leo, you're smoking crack or dropping acid. I don't know. I don't know what kind of mind alteration you've been doing. But what if, right? What if? What if we started going, can we bring these two worlds together? Would there be resistance initially? Absolutely. But it would be because we would say, hey, we want to help you with your cause. And you know what? We got something that we need help with as well. Let's work this out. That's how partnerships are formed. That's how relationships are formed. It's win-win. It's not, I'm doing this so I can use you. No, I'm doing this so I can help you, and together we can help each other. We'll be stronger in the end because of this, and watch where this will go, right? Watch where this will go. But unfortunately, I think we're so politically tied that something of that nature is just unfathomable, because something that seems to be more liberal-led than conservative-led, and a camp that is largely conservative, well, why would we ever want to associate with those people? And the same is true on the other side of the political fence. We do that. We need to break this. We need to break down these silos. More to come. Back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back in a moment.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Happy to be with you. Culture, Current Events, Our Catholic Faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. I've been hearing a lot of talk about religious liberties, about the concern over Supreme Court justices. The one thing I've said time and time again is that, first off, Oliver Wendell Holmes. That should be all anyone needs to know. That name, to realize that we never know how long justices are going to sit. We just don't. These guys may have a couple of more terms in them, those that you're confident will be retiring. And then again, we saw what happened to Scalia. You never know. That we don't know. So just as we don't know how the makeup of the court will change in the next 4 to 8 years, we also don't know how they're going to rule. Because they can be all the heck over the place, and we've watched this. Go back and look at Supreme Court rulings, especially these that we find monumental, landmark, and you're going to see something very interesting. But one thing that I posted on my Facebook page, I invite you to take a look at, it's just a Wikipedia link, but it outlines this pretty effectively. This Hosanna-Tabor Evangelical Lutheran School versus Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Now, we covered this when it happened. It was a 2012 decision, completely unanimous in support of the First Amendment. Now, that should be telling. It should be telling that when it comes down to constitutionality, because religious liberty is a constitutionally protected right that we have, praise God, it's there in our Constitution. Even the most left-leaning justices appointed by the Obama administration, Kagan and Sotomayor, ruled in favor of religious liberty as it's understood by the First Amendment. Now, that should give us hope. That should give us hope that regardless of who's in there, on these kind of issues, this is what we're going to see. Now, you've heard me say it many times, and I've referred to this as, to me, the undoubted instance of when this goes wrong. And that is in the case of Obamacare and Justice Roberts. Conservative appointee should lead the way on a conservative decision opposing something that is certainly unconstitutional, to insist that someone purchases anything from the government, which was, if you recall, that was the big thing, and he turns it into, well, it's just a tax. It's not really a penalty if you don't have insurance. No, just a tax. That's all it is. We'll call it a tax. All will be good. So, again, I would hope that those are a couple of illustrations, because I keep hearing this time and time and time again. But here's honestly, in the time remaining in this election cycle, I really want to shift the focus over and start looking at the Senate seats that are open. Because if you're really concerned about the Supreme Court, here's where it all happens. The Senate confirmation hearings, this is where those appointees have to be confirmed. And once they move through the Senate confirmation, they can become Supreme Court justices. Now, there certainly have been those times where the appointees have not passed the muster of the Senate. So if we really want to have an effect, I think you got to look at the Senate races. So I found it interesting. This is what our bishop, Bishop John Stowe, essentially said when it comes to voting. And that is, if you can't stomach the two-party candidates on the ballot, and there's not a legitimate write-in for you to feel good about that vote, then simply skip that on the ballot and go to the other offices. Because you can still make an impact, and a significant one, if you don't vote straight ticket. I think generally most of us go in and we pull a lever and bam, we're done. Well, now we don't pull a lever anymore. We push the button, right? We dial it up. That's what it is these days. I voted in the lever machines only a handful of times, and then it's been that thing forever, but I still say pull the lever. You push the button. At least that's how the voting booths are that I have been in for the past several years. But nonetheless, we go in and we vote a straight ticket, and we just kind of leave it at that. I think this election especially, first, it's a time to reconsider everything you've thought about in politics. Just a time to go, let's look at things as differently as we possibly can. Let's really examine what is at stake. Let's really examine from my own faith perspective and conscience and what I am comfortable doing. There's plenty who are uncomfortable. I get it. And there are plenty who will stop at nothing to stop someone else from getting in the office. And it certainly seems to be, as I've understood, because I have friends in both camps, the choices are not the first for either one. I think right now, liberals would much rather have Sanders. That's what I think. At least my liberal friends, they'd much rather have Sanders. I think conservatives, it's really as wide as that primary field was anyway. I think there are those who would really love to have Cruz. There are those who would love to have Rubio. I, for one, would prefer to have Kasich. But we got what we got. And now it seems to be at this pinning of one against the other. But even if you pin one against the other, if that's where you're going in, if that's your strategy and that's what you're doing, you're voting to block another, it still doesn't necessarily have to be a straight ticket. Never has to be that. So take a look at these lesser offices, if you will. Certainly in many states, there are Senate and congressional seats open, or at least up for re-election. And you can begin to examine voting records, certainly of the incumbent. That's always an important thing. And then really begin to look at the policy when it comes to the potential challenger. Are there, you know, could you have a bit of a change of direction from someone that hasn't necessarily represented you because they somehow got disconnected as they got into office, which happens, unfortunately. And maybe there are those who have been in office for a long, 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 long time who haven't really ever represented the constituency. They may be running in a challenge ticket, and maybe it's time for change there. So that's what we can do. We can look at this with a real opportunity, even if we have a degree of disdain for the two major candidates. So I really value this perspective of Bishop John Stowe to present it this way and say, look, hey, come on. There's other stuff. And what brilliance, really, when it comes to those who say they can't vote. No. You can vote. You may literally have a moral dilemma when it comes to either of these candidates, and that is completely understandable. And maybe you haven't found a suitable write-in, or perhaps they don't even have ballot the ballot permission, right? Whatever. They haven't applied for a ballot position, whatever. You still get in there and take a look at who's on the ticket and plan that. All of that stuff is there. And we're in the final stretch now. So now's the time to look at it. But certainly a wonderful right that we have to get in and do this. Faithful citizenship, forming consciences for faithful citizenship. Of course, the USCCB document, it is there. It is there for you to read, enjoy, discern, dissect. Hopefully it challenges us. Hopefully it spurs us into something more, something different. All of that, right? That's what we want to do here. We want to really be able to embrace the challenges, embrace them, realize that you're only going to get stronger by that stretch. And hopefully this one's stretching us all. Stretch me, no doubt. And we can still be as Catholic as the day is long. We can still have all of our conscience intact, and we can do what it is that we're expected to do. Even in amid the tough stuff, as it appears. And what I listen to a lot of other talk radio, and heard a commentator who said that, you know, he's been a political reporter, actually. He wasn't a commentator. He's been reporting on politics since the Nixon administration, I'm pretty sure. So what is that, 40-some-odd years, right? Been at this for a long, long time. And he says, you know what? No, never. And the question was, have you ever seen anything like this? And I expect him to say, well, you know, there was that one time. That's kind of what I thought. This guy's been at it for so long. He's watched other elections even before he covered them. I thought he's going to give us something. Right? He's going to give us some historical reflection on, well, there was that one time. No, he just said, yeah, no, never seen anything like this ever before. So I think we're all feeling it. We're all kind of at that point that, you know what, one of these guys will be it, and then what? Then what? For those like me in an independent status, I lose. But I will focus my effort toward the other races, and I will start paying a whole heck of a lot more attention to those and see exactly what change, if any, needs to be made. Right? I may like my incumbent. I may want to keep my incumbent in those positions, and I need to get out and support that as well. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. God bless.
For listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.